We welcome you to this session of our symposium. It's my pleasure to introduce our participants on the subject of a comparison of the LDS conceptions of the afterlife and the afterlife in LDS near-death experiences. Dr. Craig R. Lundahl will present his paper the paper he co-authored with Dr. Harold Whittison. Dr. Lundahl is Associate Professor of Sociology and Director of Research at Western New Mexico University in Silver City, New Mexico. Dr. Whittison is Associate Professor of Sociology at Northern Arizona University, not Western New Mexico. Northern Arizona University is at Flagstaff. Responding to the paper will be Gordon Madsen, a practicing attorney in Salt Lake City. There will probably be time for questions after the presentation and the response, and we would invite you to direct your questions, if you will, at that time to either the presenters or the respondent.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate very much the opportunity to present to you this afternoon this paper. It seems that mankind has always balanced the inevitability of death with a belief in some kind of afterlife. Christianity, in particular, has been the vehicle for this belief, which has traditionally sustained the lives of most Americans. Today, two-thirds of the American people believe in an afterlife. About 20 years ago, a modern resurgence of interest in death-related phenomena began with the investigation of Carlos Osis on the visions of dying patients as reported by physicians and nurses. About 10 years later, the study of near-death had its origins with the work of the psychiatrist Russell Noyes and of the famous and controversial thanatologist and psychiatrist Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. In 1975, the near-death experience, or NDE, was identified and delineated by the psychiatrist Raymond Moody in his popular book, Life After Life. His research disclosed a common pattern of elements in the near-death experience that included such elements as an overwhelming feeling of peace and well-being, finding oneself out of one's body, floating or being propelled through a darkness, entering a golden light, encountering and communicating with a being of light, seeing a panoramic review of one's life, and entering into a world of supernal beauty and recognizing the spirits of loved ones there with whom one could also communicate. Moody pointed out that not everyone who reports a near-death experience describes all of these elements, but that most accounts include several or most of these features. Moody further declared that near-death experiences have a quality of exceptional realness and that they usually have a lasting effect on the experience, not the least of which is the removal of any fear of death. Now, during the past decade, behavioral and medical scientists have compiled an increasing amount of scientific work on the aspect of death identified by Moody as the near-death experience. Well over 3,000 cases of near-death experience have been recorded. The body of data and theory that has emerged from this research comprises, for the most part, the field of near-death studies. This paper attempts to describe Latter-day Saint conceptions of the afterlife and compares these afterlife conceptions to the perceived afterlife in a limited number of insightful cases of Latter-day Saint near-death experiences. The near-death experience data used for this study were collected between 1975 and 1979 from six selected accounts of near-death experience by Latter-day Saints who entered another world or sphere between the years of 1856 and 1920. The data are limited to selected accounts of individuals who are adjudged dead or who experienced a very close brush with death in the course of an accident, a severe injury, or an illness. There is insufficient evidence, I should indicate to you that there is insufficient evidence to definitely determine if one account was a near-death experience. Thus, it is possible that this account may have resulted because of an out-of-body experience, not under near-death circumstances. The method used for the collection of information was the analysis of secondary sources of data. Now let's turn to LDS conceptions of the afterlife. According to Latter-day Saint theology, the world of spirits, or the spirit world, is the place of residence for all those who have died. In other words, immediately upon death, the spirits of all men and women go to the spirit world to await the resurrection's inseparable connections of their bodies and spirits. Thus, the spirit world is an intermediate condition or state where people await the resurrection. It is a tangible sphere where disembodied spirits live in one of several conditions according to what their mortal lives have merited. The elements and beings in the spirit world are as real and tangible to spiritual organs as things and beings of the temporal world are to beings of a temporal state. The location of the spirit world, according to President Brigham Young, is on the earth. The Latter-day Saint prophet Joseph Smith also taught that the spirit world is not very far from us. Further elaboration on the location of the spirit world was given by Parley P. Pratt when he wrote, quote, "As to its location, it is here on the very planet where we were born, or in other words, the earth and other planets of like sphere have their inward or spiritual spheres, as well as their outward or temporal. The one is peopled by temporal tabernacles and the other by spirits." Close quote. In general terms, the spirit world has two divisions: paradise, which is the abode of the righteous, and hell, or the spirit prison, which is the abode of the wicked. From the Book of Mormon, Alma said that the spirits of those who are righteous are received into a state of happiness, which is called paradise, a state of rest, a state of peace, where they shall rest from all their troubles and from all care and sorrow. He further stated that the spirits of the wicked, those who chose evil rather than good, shall be cast out into outer darkness or hell. Within these two divisions of the spirit world, there are many places and degrees, just as there are in this world, as well as there are all the varieties and grades of intellectual being that exist in the present world. Although the righteous and wicked are separated, they may progress from one level to another as they learn the gospel principles and live in accordance with them. I'm sorry to inform you that I'll inform you later about this, but life and work and activity all continue in the spirit world. That's also what I found, so that was the sorry part, for some people anyhow. It is primarily a place of learning and waiting. It is also a place of continued progress and a place of missionary work, where those who have received the gospel can teach it to those who have not. Pratt states that the spirit world is a place where the gospel is preached and where faith, repentance, hope, and charity may be exercised, a place of waiting for the resurrection or redemption of the body, while to those who deserve it, it is a place of punishment, a purgatory or hell where spirits are buffeted till the day of redemption. President Brigham Young stated, quote, "Compare those inhabitants on the earth who have heard the gospel in our day with the millions who have never heard it or had the keys of salvation presented to them, and you will conclude at once as I do that there is an almighty work to perform in the spirit world," close quote. Thus, the Latter-day Saint view of the afterlife is that an extensive missionary program is also being conducted in the spirit world. The Latter-day Saint view holds that the world of spirits is organized along certain lines. President Wilford Woodruff taught that the same priesthood in the Latter-day Saint Church exists in the spirit world. President Brigham Young also stated that when the faithful elders holding this priesthood go into the spirit world, they carry with them the same power and priesthood that they had while in the mortal tabernacle. According to Latter-day Saint doctrine, the church is organized and operates in priesthood and family capacities in the spirit world just as it does in this world. Each prophet stands at the head of his generation. Latter-day Saint doctrine teaches that spirits carry with them from earth the same attitudes, inclinations, feelings, which they had in this life. Spirit beings also have the same bodily form as mortals, except that the spirit body is in perfect form. At the time of death, a person also experiences a number of changes. Some of these changes that occur at the time of death include freedom from illness and ailments, increased mental capacities such as a quickened memory and the ability to consider many different ideas at the same time, movement with ease and like lightning, the ability to converse in every variety of communication, and the use of other powers and senses not available to mortal beings, such as greater powers of vision. Briefly then, the afterlife, according to Latter-day Saint doctrine, consists of a spirit world where all who have died go to await the resurrection. Its location is on the earth, but is unseen by beings in the temporal world. The spirit world has two major divisions, paradise and hell, with many places and degrees within both these divisions. Life, work, and activity continue in the spirit world. However, the major activities occurring there are learning and missionary work. The spirit world is organized in priesthood and family capacities. Spirits enter the spirit world with the same personality and have the same bodily form as when they were mortals. Now let's examine the perceived afterlife in selected LDS near-death experiences. All of the Latter-day Saint near-death experience referred to in this paper encountered another realm or world filled with spirits of people who have died. And if you're aware of near-death research and some of the work that's going on, you know that not all people have that feature occur in their near-death experience. These six cases of Latter-day Saint near-death experiences In these six cases of Latter-day Saint near-death experiences, the Latter-day Saints usually have either found themselves in the spirit world unexplainably or were taken there by a guide or deceased relative. However, in one Latter-day Saint near-death experience, the person distinctively states that he passed but a short distance from his body through a film into the world of spirits. He further states that his first visual impression was the nearness of the world of spirit to the world of mortality. This observation suggests that a world of deceased persons is very close to us, yet it is unseen by mortal beings. Comments by the Latter-day Saint NDE experience suggest that the spirit world is divided into different communities or spheres representing various degrees of progression. One NED experience stated, quote, and some of you may be familiar with some of these cases because they're in LDS literature, quote, when in the spirit world, I saw the order of righteous men and women, beheld them organized in their several grades. I could see every man and woman in their grade and order, close quote. In another LDS NDE account, a lady went to an area where a large congregation of people seemed to be shut up within walls, and there were so many that it seemed to be in the millions. And still additional information on the divisions of the spirit world is offered by another Latter-day Saint NDE experient when he commented, quote, particularly was it observed that the wicked and the unrepentant were confined to a certain district by themselves, the confines of which were so definitely determined and impassable as the line marking the division of the physical from the spiritual world, a mere film, but impassable until the person has changed. There was much activity within the different spheres, and appointed ministers of salvation were seen coming from the higher to the lower spheres in pursuit of their missionary appointments. Quite a distance through various scenes and passing innumerable people, I traveled before I reached the sphere where I had first entered, close quote. When one Latter-day Saint experient asked his deceased wife the whereabouts of three other personages, she replied, they have gone ahead to perform and transact business for us. Another experient learned in the spirit world that the spirits may progress from one level to another as they learn and accept gospel principles and ordinances. Now, these statements identify a spirit world with important divisions, districts, spheres, places, and degrees. It also seems to be a place where persons are able to progress from one level to another depending on how well they live gospel principles. The spirit world, according to the near-death experiences of the Latter-day Saints referred to in this paper, is a world similar to our own in that, and here's the sad part for some people, like I said, life, work, and activity do continue there. However, it is different, or it appears or seems to be different, in that it is very organized, or appears to be very organized, and certain activities are very prominent. This is evident in the observations by five Latter-day Saint NDE experience. One observation went like this, quote, but oh, says he, the order and government that were there, when in the spirit world I saw the order of righteous men and women, beheld them organized in their several grades, and there appeared to be no obstruction to my vision. I could see every man and woman in their grade and order. He said that the people he saw there were organized in family capacities, and when he looked at them, he saw grade after grade, and all were organized and in perfect harmony, close quote. Another Latter-day Saint gave this description of the organization of the spirit world. Quote, "While I was in the spirit world, I observed that the people there were busy, but they were perfectly organized for the work they were doing," close quote. And still another experient saw this structure in the spirit world. Quote, "The people I met there, I did not think of as spirits, but men and women, self-thinking and self-acting individuals, going about important business in a most orderly manner. There was perfect order there, and everybody had something to do and seemed to be about their business. All worthy men and women were appointed to special and regular service under a well-organized plan of action," close quote. According to three NDE experience, most of the activities in the spirit world are centered around seeking knowledge, establishing family relationships, conducting missionary service. One LDS near-death experience reveals that the spirit goes into the afterlife with the same personality which it had in this life, as well as it has the same bodily form as the physical body. One experience says that all spirits take on an adult form. The Latter-day Saint cases also indicate that new powers and increases in capabilities are gained in the spirit world. An apt conclusion to this comparison of LDS conceptions of the afterlife with the afterlife perceived by LDS near-death experience might best be summarized in the words exclaimed by Jedediah M. Grant after he had been to the spirit world two nights in succession. Quote, "Why, it's just as Brother Brigham says it is. It's just as he told us many a time," unquote. In other words, the afterlife, through the eyes of a limited number of LDS experience, is just what the Latter-day Saint theology says it is. It is a spirit world filled with the spirits of people who have died. It is a world of divisions and spheres where people may grow and develop, where life, work, and activity continue, and where the major activities are learning and missionary service. It is a world that is very organized and in family capacities. The spirits who are there have new powers and much the same personality and bodily appearance as they did in this life. However, this comparison is only a beginning. Attention should be drawn to the fact that such a limited number of Latter-day Saint near-death experiences cannot be the basis for any firm conclusions, just some preliminary indications. But the striking consistency in the afterlife described by these near-death experience reports with the afterlife given in Latter-day Saint doctrine cannot be discounted. Certainly, it warrants further investigation. Thank you very much.
I applaud Drs. Lundahl and Wittison for making this maiden voyage into an area of intense curiosity and comparatively little data. In doing so, I am mindful of the usual reviewer's cop-out and temptation to say they could have gone much further. They could have written down several different other avenues. They could have made an encyclopedia of the subject. Most papers, however, don't have any time or sufficient time and are under other limitations which restrict the scope of such subject to be covered. Our authors here state clearly what they propose to do and then proceed to do it. They also make clear the paucity of direct accounts that were available to them. Their paper does what its title says it would. Now, for the next voyage. one or two presumptuous suggestions. First, I would hope that they would broaden their scriptural and Latter-day Prophet utterances as their doctrinal base, and in that connection would hope that they would include our most recently adopted scriptures, sections 137 and 138 of the Doctrine and Covenants, formerly attached to the Pearl of Great Price, which constitute Joseph Smith's vision of seeing his brother Alvin and other members of the family in the celestial kingdom, and Joseph F. Smith's vision of the redemption of the dead. Next, I would suggest to our writer that a thesis on the subject, titled The Nature of the Spirit World as Taught in the Holy Scriptures and by the Prophets, Seers, and Revelators of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, written by Roger T. Ralphs and submitted in August of 1966 as his master's thesis at BYU, is a fine point of departure in that he collects the scriptures and the statements of the presidents of the church and the subjects and subjects them to adds to the subject two lengthy appendices. One of the first appendix cites additional commentary from other general authorities, and the second collects several spirit world experiences, dreams, visions, and near-death experiences, most of which have been published. Some of these I will refer to in a moment. In addition, another source that could well be tapped is Davis Bitton, who gave a talk at the Mormon History Association meetings at Weber State College last May on the subject of dreams, as found in Mormon diaries. He is, perhaps most of you are aware, compiled the seminal work on Mormon biographies titled Guide to Mormon Diaries and Autobiographies. In discussing this paper with Davis, he advised me that a number of Mormon diarists and journal keepers have recorded experiences of contact with the spirit world. He has cataloged these and now has a rather extensive assortment of such entries. From these and the other primary sources, I should imagine, having made only a cursory examination myself, that the experiences could be primarily classified, first of all, as to those of people who have visited the spirit world while asleep or in vision, as opposed to those who go there in connection with near-death experiences where their spirit actually leaves the body. May I give an example or two of each? From Wilford Woodruff, and I have to say at the outset that President Woodruff, unlike the rest of us, seemed to have a bus at the ready. He commuted back and forth with great regularity. And I'm not saying that disrespectfully. He says it's a matter of factly, it's charming, as this entry. Joseph Smith visited me a great deal after his death, and he taught me many important principles. The last time I saw him was in heaven. In the night vision, I saw him at the door of the temple in heaven, temples in the spirit world. He came to me and spoke to me. He said he could not stop to talk with me because he was in a hurry. The next man I met was Father Smith, Joseph's father. He could not talk with me because he was in a hurry. I met half a dozen brethren who had held high positions on earth, and none of them could stop to talk with me because they were in a hurry. I was much astonished. By and by, I saw the prophet again, and I got the privilege of asking him a question. "Now," said I want to know why you were in a hurry. I've been in a hurry all my life, but I expected my hurry would be over when I got into the kingdom of heaven, if ever I did. Joseph said, "I will tell you, Brother Woodruff. Every dispensation that has had the priesthood on the earth and has gone into the celestial kingdom has had a certain amount of work to do to prepare to go to the earth with the Savior when he goes on earth to reign. Each dispensation has had ample time to do its work. We have not. We are the last dispensation, and so much work has to be done that we need to be in a hurry to accomplish it." Of course, that was satisfactory, but it was a new doctrine to me. Of a similar purport, he says in another discourse, "I will here make a remark concerning my own feelings. After the death of Joseph Smith, I saw and conversed with him many times in my dreams in the night season. On one occasion, he and his brother Hiram met me when on the sea going on a mission to England. I had Dan Jones with me. He received his mission from Joseph Smith before his death, and the prophet talked freely to me about the mission I was then going to perform. And he also talked to me with regards to the mission of the 12 apostles in the flesh. And he laid before me the work they had to perform. He also spoke of the reward they would receive after death. And there were many other things he laid before me in his interview on that occasion. And when I awoke, many of the things he had told me were taken from me. I could not comprehend them. I've had many interviews with Brother Joseph until the last 15 or 20 years of my life. I haven't seen him for that length of time. He goes on and talks about, but I've seen Brigham instead. And then he concludes, Brigham, Heber, Jedediah, George A., and several others. The last time I saw them, we were in a conference in southern Utah, and they were in a carriage ahead of me, dressed in their priestly robes. I asked Brigham, would you like to talk to this next conference? No, I've done my preaching to you. You get that opportunity now, Woofer, but let me tell you what to tell them. So he does. And the point is, tell them to get the Spirit. And I'm not, again, trying to be disrespectful. He just is so casual about it that it boggles my mind. And then he says, I learned from that experience that Brigham said, we're here looking over you because Joseph has gone on before. And from that, he said, this idea manifests itself to me that such men advance in the spirit world, corroborating what has just been said. Now, as that is the relation or the kind of experience that Wilford and there are others who have had dreams and come back without any problem, contrast that with those who leave their body and then, in fact, say, as Jedediah M. Grant said, the idea of his having to come back into this world was very painful to him. This was the first time that he had ever welcomed death, but he could now welcome it to himself and to his friend. In another entry from the Juvenile Instructor, Volume 20, in December 1 of 1886, in an article signed only by the initials J.N., a young boy had a drowning experience in the Jordan River, and while out of his body, was interviewed and given the option to stay in the spirit world or to come back to his body, and after some discussion, he elected to return. He then continues, in an instant, almost as quick as thought, I was at the spot where the drowning occurred and saw my body lying on the bank. Young Shirtliff and John Harker had placed it in such a position that the head was downhill. They were working hard to get the water to flow from the mouth. It looked loathsome to me. Notwithstanding, I had expressed the desire to return to it. Suddenly, I became insensible to what transpired. I began to recover sensibility in my body, to which I had returned in the interval and that it appeared blank. My agony, while recovering, was fearful. It seemed as if the suffering of an ordinary lifetime had been concentrated into a few minutes' duration. It appeared as if every sinew of my physical system was being violently torn out. I have to make an allusion to Lorenzo Snow's drowning experience off the coast of Lahaina in Lahaina Bay in Hawaii. I haven't found the exact reference, but I have a recollection that he said that when he re-entered his body, he felt as though there were 1,000 needles pricking him entirely. And I also have to make the aside that he told his sister Eliza, and she records it in the autobiography and family record of Lorenzo Snow, that prior to this experience, he had had migraine headaches all his life. But following that drowning, he'd never had another migraine. So there is the cure for migraine headaches. Now, I suppose further research needs to be done on it as to whether it has to be salt water from Lahaina Bay or any nearby stream or lake will suffice as well. We haven't gotten to that stage. An additional classification or subject I would hope would be explored in both what we teach and what has been experienced with regard to spirits being children or adults. The one experience has been noted that they are referred to as adults, and that was the doctrine that Joseph F. Smith taught, attributing it to his father, with regard to the death of Bishop Edward Hunter's son, who died as a little child and came to him in the stature of a full-grown manhood and revealed himself to his father and saying, I am your son. Bishop Hunter didn't understand it. He went to my father and said, Hiram, what does this mean? I buried my son when only a little boy, but he's come to me as a full-grown man, noble, glorious young man, declaring himself to be my son. What does it mean? And Hiram replied, Jesus was a full-grown spirit before he came to the flesh, and so were we. They may come to you either as appearing as a child to be familiar to you, or as he goes on to say, if they have an important message to give to you, they will come as they really are, which is adults. Then Joseph F. Smith relates a dream that he himself has. on another occasion. It's the addendum of the book Gospel Doctrine, in which he talks about going in the spirit world to a large building, stopping on the way to get a bath and put on some fresh garments that he discovered he had with him, and then arriving at the building, the prophet Joseph opens the door and said, "Joseph, you were late. Yet I took confidence and said, 'Yes, but I am clean.'" I don't find that funny, I'm sorry. I find that something that I struggle with. "I am clean. He clasped my hand and drew me in and closed the great door. I felt his hand just as tangible as I ever felt a handed man. I knew him, and when I entered, I saw my father, Brigham, Heber, Willard, and other good men I had known, standing in a row. I looked as if it were across this valley, and it seemed to be filled with a vast multitude of people. But on the stage were all the people I had known. My mother was there, now get this, and she sat with the child in her lap. And I could name over as many as I remember of their names who sat there, who seemed to be among the chosen, among the exalted. The prophet said to me, 'Joseph,' then pointing to my mother, he said, 'Bring me that child.' I went to my mother, picked up the child, and thought it was a fine baby boy. I carried it to the prophet, and as I handed it to him, I purposely thrust my hands up against his breast. I felt the warmth." And he goes on, "as though I wanted to verify to myself it was really happening, and Joseph smiled at my action." Here. So here's Joseph F. saying, spirits are adults, but when I had a vision, there was this bouncing baby boy. I think that some further elucidation, either by way of doctrinal or by way of additional experiences to collate, would help. One of those, the sixth referred to by our presenter, is of a young woman named Ella Jensen, who indicated that she saw, among her travel, Eliza R. Snow teaching some children in Sunday school. Also of interest, at least to me, is whether any collaboration or connection can be made of the experiences which suggest that there is communication between unembodied spirits and disembodied spirits, that is, those who have not yet come to mortality with those who have left it. What little exposure I've had to both the doctrinal statements and the experiences related is inconclusive. Perhaps the additional data could more clearly define that. Our authors have teased us briefly with the Kubler-Ross, Noyes and Clady, and the Moody case study collection, all non-Mormon sources, but make no comparison of them with the data that they furnish us from the Mormon experiences. A statement from Moody I find intriguing in Life After Life. Interestingly, while the above description of the being of light, that common element of the light, is utterly invariable, the identification of the being varies from individual to individual and seems to be largely a function of the religious background, training, or beliefs of the person involved. Thus, most of those who are Christians in training or belief identify the light as Christ and sometimes draw biblical parallels in support of their interpretation. A Jewish man and woman identified the light as an angel. It was clear in both cases that the subject was not meant to imply that the being had wings, played a harp, or even had a human shape or appearance. There was only the light. What each was trying to get across was that they took the being to be an emissary or guide. A man who had had no religious beliefs or training at all prior to his experience simply identified what he saw as a being of light. The same label was used by one lady of the Christian faith who apparently didn't feel any compulsion to call the light Christ. He then quotes one of his other case studies by saying, "Now I think that the voice that was talking to me actually realized that I wasn't ready to die. You know, it was just kind of testing me more than anything else. Yet from the moment the light spoke to me, I felt really good, secure, and loved. The love which came from it is just unimaginable, indescribable. It was a fun person," and notice it, he says, he doesn't know which sex to give it. "It was a fun person to be with, and it had a sense of humor, too, definitely." If Moody be right, and our own religious preconceptions color what we envision upon leaving mortality, then I would hope we could collect sufficient material of those not expecting a life after mortality on the theory that their perceptions would be the least colored, and therefore compare and turn these with our Mormon counterparts. I should also like to observe one experience the Heber Q. Hale one talks about, a visit to Spirit Prison. That's the only one of which I am aware. So far as I'm able to tell, the Mormon experience with the spirit will generally make no reference to visits to that part of the spirit world that our doctrine refers to as Spirit Prison, or Hell, or Sheol, Hades, the place where people go without, who have not had the gospel. Perhaps most, if not all, of the returnees have been ticketed for paradise. Hence, we have only a partial view. Nevertheless, let me then just quickly allude, finally in passing, to some other corollary experiences having to do with the principal work of missionary work, teaching, and training. I want only to talk about the women. The reference has already been made to the men with the priesthood. Joseph F. Smith said at the funeral of Mary Ann Freeze, "Now among all these millions of spirits that have lived in the earth and passed away from generation to generation since the beginning of the world without the knowledge of the gospel, among them you may count that at least half are women. Who was going to preach the gospel to the women? Who was going to carry the testimony of Jesus Christ to the hearts of the women who have passed away without a knowledge of it? Well, to my mind, it's a simple thing. These good sisters who have been set apart, ordained to the work, called to it, authorized by the authority of the holy priesthood to minister for their sex in the house of God for the living and for the dead, will be fully authorized and empowered to preach the gospel and minister to the women while the elders and prophets are preaching it to the men." Concluding, I should like to read the one single best account, by way of description at least, of which I am aware, which comes from Jedediah M. Grant, who visited the spirit world, as already indicated, on two nights in succession immediately prior to his death on December 1, 1856. First, as he related it to Leonard W. Hardy, as that account is recorded in the manuscript History of Brigham Young under the date of November 26, 1856, and then the corroborating allusions to that recital mentioned both by Brigham Young and Heber C. Kimball at Jedediah's funeral, December 4, 1856. "My spirit left my body and went to the spirit world. I saw my wife and conversed with her. She showed me our child, which was buried on the plains. She said, 'The wolves eat her up, but here she is, pure and sound.' I also saw my sister Caroline and conversed with her. I inquired of my wife about Brother Joseph and Hiram Smith. She pointed south and said they were there. He saw many of the saints and found them pure and clean. They were clothed in pure white linen. My wife came some distance to meet me. There was no dirt or filth in the spirit world or darkness. Everything was in perfect order. He saw many mothers learning their little girls to work, and they appeared to be drawing out the finest threads from spindles, like the finest silk. He was told that he must come back to this world and fight the devils a little longer and set his family in order. The idea of his having to come back to this world was very painful to him. This was the first time he had ever welcomed death, but he could now welcome it to himself and to his friends. He rejoiced much in the beauty and order of the spirit world and the beautiful gardens, walks, fruits, etc. He saw a vast number in the spirit world. They extended a great distance, but distance did not obstruct or hinder a perfect view, a vision in the vision of that world of light. There was not a particle of confusion, and no one was in each other's way." Then from Brigham, and then finally Heber. Brother Kimball could tell what I will now just touch upon better than I can, for he heard it. I will, however, say a few words about it. A short time before his death, Brother Jedediah went to the world of spirits two nights in succession and saw perfect order among them. He saw many of the saints whom he was acquainted with, saw his wife Caroline and his child that was buried on the route across the plains and dug up and eaten by the wolves. She said to him, "Here is my child. You know it was eaten up by the wolves, but it's here and it's taken no harm." It was the spirit of this child he saw. He came back to his body, but did not like to enter it again, for he saw that it was filthy and corrupt. He also told how his brethren and his family felt when he told them what he saw in the spirit world, and perhaps this characterizes us all. He said that his friends felt like saying, "Well, Brother Grant, maybe it is so, and maybe it is not so. We do not know anything about it." Ram Heber, I laid my hands upon him and blessed him and asked God to strengthen his lungs that he might be easier. And in 2 or 3 minutes, he raised himself up and talked for about an hour as busily as he could, telling me what he had seen and what he had understood, till I was afraid he would weary himself when I arose and left him. He said to me, "Brother Heber, I have been into the spirit world 2 nights in succession, and of all the dreads that ever came across me, the worst was to have to again return to my body, though I had to do it. But oh," said he, "the order and government that were there. When in the spirit world I saw the order of righteous men and women, beheld them organized in their several grades, and there appeared to be no obstruction to my vision. I could see every man and woman in their grade and order. I looked to see whether there was any disorder there, but there was none. Neither could I see any death nor any darkness, disorder, or confusion." He said that the people he saw there were organized in family capacities, and when he looked at them, he saw grade after grade, and all were organized in perfect harmony. He would mention one item after another and say, "Why, it's just as Brother Brigham has told it. It's just as he has told us many a time." That is a testimony to the truth of what Brother Brigham teaches us. And I know it's true from what little light I have. He saw the righteous gathered together in the spirit world, and there were no wicked spirits among them. He saw his wife. She was the first person that came to him. He saw many that he knew, but did not have conversation with any except his wife, Caroline. She came to him and said that she looked beautiful, and that she had their little child that had died on the plains in her arms, and said, "Mr. Grant, here is little Margaret. You know that the wolves ate her up, but it did not hurt her. Here she is, all right." He also spoke of the buildings he saw there, remarking that the Lord gave Solomon wisdom and poured gold and silver into his hands that he might display his skill and ability, and said that the temple erected by Solomon was much inferior to the most ordinary building which he saw in the spirit world. "In regard to the gardens," said Brother Grant, "I have seen good gardens on this earth, but I never saw any to compare with those that were there. I saw flowers of numerous kinds, and some with from 50 to 100 different colored flowers growing upon one stalk." After mentioning the things that he had seen, he spoke of how much he disliked to return and resume his body after having seen the beauty and glory of the spirit world where the righteous spirits are gathered together.
Thank you very much. Our time is short, but we do have time for a couple of questions if we have some that are burning, and I'd like to ask all three of our participants to stand so that, especially so we can acknowledge Dr. Whittison's participation too, and direct your question to any of the three in the time that we have left, and we must break here so that the next meeting can start at 3 o'clock. Please, gentlemen.
I want to make a comment.
Go ahead.
How does LDS out-of-the-body experience compare with out-of-the-body experiences of all of these other researchers that you've said? Do they come to the same kind of conclusions? How are they similar, and how are they different, and what's the percentage?
Since I haven't had a chance to talk, I'm going to address that one. What got me into the field in the first place was looking at the non-LDS. And the more I read about them, the more I collected, the more it became very clear to me that there were extreme close parallels. In fact, one man came up to me and said, "I read that Mormon book." And I said, "What Mormon book's that?" He said, "The one about all the near-death experience." I said, "Well, Mr. Moody happened to be a Methodist philosopher, but even, you know, that we can't help that he also has discovered the truth." If you're interested in the field, there's about 3 or 4 good research studies been done. A fellow by the name of Sabom, a cardiologist in Georgia, wanted to test to see if Moody's model was correct. And after interviewing some 60 or 70 patients of his and surrounding doctors, he concluded that Moody's contentions were correct. Haraldson and Oasis interviewed 1,000 doctors and nurses in the United States and India about what they saw their patients do right before they died. And the conclusion there is, in fact, we've written 2 other papers, but we didn't refer to them in this one, where we actually developed a theoretical model for near-death experiences using Mormon theology. The second paper shows how well the Mormon theology fits all NDEs, regardless of their religious and philosophical backgrounds. So it fits it extremely close.
I might be able to help answer your question there. I prepared a manuscript on the perceived other world and Mormon near-death experiences, and I used some of these cases and some others that I have. And I've speculated, especially in the cases that I have, that some of these were of extreme duration, as Moody calls them, and they lasted quite a long time. But we're not exactly sure how long they lasted. Some of them you have an idea of how long they last. Like, I think one, as I recall, and this goes back a while, lasted for somewhere between 2 to 3 hours before the person came back. And yet, when you talk about cases today, it seems with our modern medical technology that you're able to bring people back quicker, and they don't have very much time. So I speculate they've had more time to look around up there if they get that far. Okay. And I did find the same thing. In searching the literature on that, found that there are about 100 recorded cases of persons who've gone into this other sphere. But most of those cases that have been recorded, they just get a brief glimpse. Sometimes they don't even get in, so to speak. They didn't get past the gate, but they look over the fence. And they see what's over there. And they're able to describe a lot of the physical characteristics of that world, but they don't get to talk to anybody. And in the paper that I did do, I developed a social description of that world, basically because these cases deal so much with that area and what's going on there. And you can't find much of anything else on it.
We better take just one more. Here's one more.
Did I understand you say that you're here on the earth?
All right. There are so many people on the earth,
so many people who have died. Do you want to answer
that? I don't pretend to be an expert, but I have a friend in the physics department at the University of Utah who said that if we were to just take our physical bodies of all mortality that have lived here, we could do it in 1 cubic mile and put it in Grand Canyon, it'd be totally unnoticed. So that there's plenty of room in the atmosphere and on the surface of this earth.
Can we expect a book or further writing? Thank you very much.